Welcome to the online ministry of Pacific Beach United Methodist Church, located in beautiful San Diego, California. Pacific Beach UMC is a member of the Reconciling Ministries Network and welcomes persons of all ages and backgrounds for worship, study, and service opportunities. More information can be found on our website at pbumc.org. May you be enriched in the hearing of these words, and may you receive and enjoy God's blessing.
Last week we talked a little bit about how we'll measure our lives in terms of a particular way. And if you remember, I asked you to turn over your bulletins on the back to that notes section, and I asked you to write down a word. You remember what word I asked you to write down? Love. And we talked about how we measure our lives in love. And we talked about that through the lens of the parable of the soils. And we talked about how it might feel to receive that seed of God's love, to nurture that seed of God's love, and to bear fruit, particularly as Paul talks about, to bear spiritual fruit so that we might share God's love. And do you remember I gave you all some homework? How many of you did a little bit of, let me ask you the question this way. How many of you have some pennies in your pocket right now? Yeah. Good. Some of you do, some of you don't. That's okay. I confess that I didn't use pennies. I didn't pick one up. I use guitar picks instead of pennies. It's not about anything other than that's just what I have laying around. I have lots of guitar picks. So I have three guitar picks. Now, I confess to you, I didn't get through all three of my guitar picks this last week. I got through two of them. Okay, but not all three. Now, if this sounds mysterious to you, let me remind you what we talked about last week. I invited you to get, you know, three pennies or three of something and to put them in your pocket and use that as a reminder to do something for someone else, some expression of love and care. And it's got to be bigger than, you know, just opening the door for somebody. Jesus teaches us about sacrificial love, and so it has to be something a little bit more sacrificial. And I wasn't asking for a lot. We drew the bar at about 10 minutes. Spend 10 minutes of your time doing something for someone else. Like I said, I only got through a couple. One, frankly, was an easy one. It had to do with a gentleman that I was working with on Wednesday night when we have our programs here. The other one was a little bit different. Beth and I were at the elementary school up the road here, and we were picking up our youngest son, Zachary. And we'd picked him up, and we're headed out, and we saw a young child there who was crying. And we started talking to him. He was all alone. He was all by himself, and we started talking to him. Turned out he couldn't find his mom. We didn't know if mom had not come to pick him up or... Now, there were teachers around, there were other parents around. We could have just assumed that that the child would have been fine, and that's probably how that would have worked out, but we chose to wait anyway. We chose to check in and have some conversation, and then when we learned what was happening, we went and got another teacher, and that teacher came and participated in the conversation, and then the mom showed up who had already arrived to pick up the child but was just in a teacher's classroom helping out with something, and then coming. Everything was fine, but it took a little time. I didn't tell him, but I thought about this in the time. My oldest son, Cameron, he probably should have moved a penny too because he was waiting at school for us to pick him up and he had to wait longer because we did this thing. So I hope that you have had an experience. And in fact, I would encourage you to talk with people about those experiences, what it's like to share that kind of time and energy and love and care for someone. Think about those times when you've had an opportunity to move that penny or whatever it is from one pocket to another and how that affects you in addition to how that affects the person for whom you are giving of yourself. We're going to continue to talk about how we measure our lives, but we're going to talk about that in a little bit of an additional way, a new way today. And this is particularly in light of sort of recognizing the way the world tells us that we should measure ourselves. And if we're to really boil it down, like one of the ways it seems like the world tells us is the right way to measure our lives is by the size of our bank accounts or our investment portfolio. In other words, how much money we have. Like it seems like the world values that in a lot of ways. when you think about major magazine publications, right? How often is there somebody on the cover of that magazine because of their wealth? How often are we sort of classifying people based on how much money and or stuff that they have? And sometimes we do it in slightly more subtle ways, right? How often do we assume something about someone based on where they live? Anybody who lives further west than we are right now, we might assign some cultural value because they live close to the ocean. But I would say in many ways, that's really sort of a faulty way of classifying people. And here's a tangible example. Beth and I live about, and the boys, they live with us. Beth and the boys and I live in a house just about a mile north of the church here. If you go up Ingram is this road here, and then you turn on Vicky, we're near the top of Vicky, right? So if you go to our house, number one, people around the Pacific area would say, hold on, that's not PB, that's not Pacific Beach, that's North PB. Oh, it's North PB. Apparently that makes a difference. I didn't know. See, here's what I found. Our next-door neighbors are real estate agents. And real estate agents have to be acutely aware of where the boundaries are between various communities. See, and our next-door neighbor said, well, really, like if you look at the line, you're actually in La Jolla. Oh, we're in La Jolla. That's a whole different thing. That's a whole different ballgame, right? Because if somebody says to you, I live in La Jolla, what status do we assign to that person? Is it, what was that? Poor, maybe. More commonly, I think that we assign to that person that they are wealthy, that they are well-to-do, and therefore they have cultural value. Right? And it's probably different than when somebody says, well, I live in Santee. Now, I'm not trying to say anything bad about people who live in Santee. I'm trying to say culturally we value people differently in some tangible ways that maybe we want to pay attention to. And it works the other way too, doesn't it? What assumptions do we make when we see someone who's standing at an intersection with a sign? What assumptions do we make? A hand raised. Tell me, what assumptions do we make? Zach says, I assume that they need help and we need to help them in some way. That's good, and I like that assumption. Very often the assumption that we make is somehow they're a lazy person, somehow they are maybe some kind of criminal or drug addict, somehow they deserve what they are experiencing. Now, those are assumptions that I think are absolutely false. Like, yeah, are there some people who maybe are in that situation because of some really lousy choices? Sure. Should we ever assume that folks who are in that situation deserve that? Or that they're automatically lazy or drug addicts or criminals because they're standing at an intersection holding a cardboard sign? I don't think that's a safe assumption. So do you see how our culture places value on people based on what stuff they have or how much money they have, right? And I'm not immune to it either, my friends. I wish to share a confession with you. You see, it was just a month ago when Apple announced the new iPhone, and I had to get it. This is it. I bought into it. I bought into the hype. And how often do we see the advertisements on various television or streaming situations or banner ads when we're online? How often do we see the advertisements that tell us, if you have this one thing, then you will have made it. If you have the right clothes, or if you wear the right perfume, or if you have the right shoes, or if you have the right iPhone, then you will have value. How often do we receive those messages? But I don't think that's the way we should measure our lives. Paul writes something interesting for us in 1 Timothy, which I find really sort of profound. And let's read this from the 6th chapter of Timothy, just a couple of verses, 9 and 10. But people who are trying to get rich fall into temptation. They are trapped. I love the language of these verses. They are trapped by many stupid and harmful passions that plunge people into ruin and destruction. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. That scripture is familiar to you because we often misquote it. It's not that money is the root of all evil. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some have wandered away from the faith and have impaled themselves with a lot of pain because they made money their goal. Do you see how maybe the way that culture informs us on where value lies is maybe not the way that we ought to think about value? Here's another way to think about it. Here's another illustration for you. I want to show you a video, and in terms of setting up the video, I want you to turn your attention to estate sales. Right? Sometimes I see signs around town for estate sales. Sometimes online advertisements are like, oh, here's this auction, right, for an estate sale. Especially if you work in real estate, you know about estate sales and have experienced some of those things. There's an auctioneer. This video is an interview with an auctioneer. He's out of the Midwest in Kansas. And he talks about some of that experience of being an auctioneer, particularly around estate sales. And he says something at the end of this video that really sort of sets us up for an understanding of maybe collecting stuff, maybe having stuff, maybe the prioritization of stuff and money isn't where we ought to make our priorities. So let's watch this video.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for attending the auction today. I got $20 now, $30, $35 now, $40, $45 now, $50, $55 now, $60, $65 now, $70. That's $65 bid now, $70. Would you get $70? $65 bid now, $70. Would you get $70? Sold it over there, $65, number 222.
In the course of our life, we've done well over 1,000 auctions and sold over hundreds of thousands of items. You know what I like about auctions is all the different people you meet. In every house, there's always a treasure of some kind. It's a treasure that you may or may not know is there. I remember one time we did an auction for a family, and there was a bulldog paperweight. And we were thinking it was a $20 to $30 item, and it brought $875. There's going to be some things that bring more than you think that they should, and there's going to be other things that you think is worth a lot of money that doesn't bring very much. People of a generation before us grew up collecting a lot of glassware, plates, depression glasses, painted plates. And about 10 to 15 years ago, those had a great value. Today, that market has really dwindled. There was a time that Avon bottles were very, very expensive, and today, $5 will buy you a great big basket of them. You know, I have done enough auctions that I have watched the possessions totally destroy a family at the end. And I've done auctions where the family has been blessed. All of the average stuff at the end of the day will all be gone, and it will just bring a fraction of what it costs new. There will be those exceptional items that have done better. And I always sit down with the client ahead of time, try to tell them that, you know, we're going to take your life's work, and in about 4 hours, we're going to dispose of it.
That quote at the end. I always tell clients, we're going to take your life's work, and in about 4 hours, we're going to dispose of it. If my life's work can be disposed of in 4 hours, I'm not doing something right. Think about that for a second. If your life's work can be disposed of in 4 hours, ask yourselves, is that right? If our life's work is focused on the collection of money and stuff, then maybe it can be disposed of in the case of about 4 hours. But if your life's work is about giving of yourself to others, I don't think that can be disposed of in 4 hours. if your life's work is about living in such a way that you give of your time and your energy and your spirit and your finances and everything that you have, giving of the gifts that God has given you, the talents that God has given you, the time and energy that God has given you, if your life's work is about giving everything like that away, then I don't think that can be disposed of, certainly not in 4 hours. How is it that we are measuring our lives? Last week I asked you to write down a word on the back of your bulletin, and I'd like you to write down another word. I mentioned this is in the notes section on the back of your bulletin. There's pens in the pew backs in front of you, and here's the word I'd like you to write down. Generosity. I think we must live a generous life. I think we must live a generous life. I think if we choose to live a generous life, then our life can't be disposed of in 4 hours. I think we must live a generous life. Now let's talk about what that can look like. And I'd like to turn our attention to our primary scripture for the day. This is out of the Gospel of Matthew, the 25th chapter. And here now is Emily reads.
The kingdom of heaven is like a man who was leaving on a trip. He called his servants and handed his possessions over to them. To one he gave 5 valuable coins, and to another he gave 2, and to another he gave 1. He gave to each servant according to that servant's ability. Then he left on his journey. After the man left, the servant who had 5 valuable coins took them and went to work doing business with them. He gained 5 more. In the same way, the one who had 2 valuable coins gained 2 more. But the servant who had received the 1 valuable coin dug a hole in the ground and buried his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them.
Now, very often the way we hear this parable, like this translation changes something that maybe you've noticed. It talks about a valuable coin. Now, when I was growing up, you know how I heard this parable? Who knows the word I'm looking for? It's the parable of the talents. Right? I like so much about the Common English Bible, this translation, but I don't like this idea of a valuable coin because I think it waters it down too much for us. But I think it'll be helpful for us to know, like, what is a talent? So let's talk, like, historically about what is a talent. We might think about it as a coin, but I'm not sure that that's the safest way to think about it. We might think about it as a particular value, which sort of has a little more traction, but let's, like, talk about it at its core. See, a talent is a unit of measure. Now, the history of this unit of measure is it was the equality of weight of roughly a cubic foot of water. Now, in ancient times, they didn't really measure in feet, so there's a little bit of discrepancy about what a cubic foot of water, well, we know what a cubic foot of water weighs today, like science tells us that, but because there's some discrepancy on what that measurement is, you know, we could go anywhere from 50 to 120 pounds. Most scholars will settle on 75 to 80 pounds is this unit of measure, okay? But a talent is this unit of measure of something precious, gold or silver. So that's what a talent is. This unit of measure, let's go, because math, let's go with 75 pounds. And let's go, academics will lean a little bit more in this case toward gold than silver. So let's go with 75 pounds of gold. Anybody know what 75 pounds of gold, 1 talent, would be worth today? You guys were here last service. You guys know. All right. Anybody else? $1.475 million today. I looked at the price of gold yesterday. I had to do the math between ounces and pounds and all that. So $1.475 million roughly. Okay. But again, because math, let's go $1.5 million. Okay. Because there's how many talents? There's 5 talents for one. There's what, 3 talents for the other and 1 talent, right? So the person who gets 1 talent, that's easy to think about. It's $1.5 million, okay? For 3 talents, that's $4.5 million. For 5 talents, that's $7.5 million. That's this parable. That's the value of money that we're talking about. Now, where do we see ourselves in this story? Are we the master? I don't know about you, but I don't have that kind of money. We must be the servants. We must be the servants. And so what is it that we do with what is given to us? Well, the servant who has five, who is given five talents goes to work. And after a long time, the master comes back. And how many talents does that person give back to the master? Started with five. How many do they give back? Five plus the other five. Right. So a total of 10 talents. The one who has three talents, right? $4.5 million goes to work with that money. And how much comes back to the master when the master returns after a long time away? $9 million. Okay. And then the one, the servant who's given one talent, $1.5 million. What do? Hear it this way. I want you to imagine that you have an investment broker. Maybe you work with Charles Schwab. Maybe you work with somebody else. Okay? You go to your investment broker and you say, here's $1.5 million. I want you to do your thing with it and I'm going to come back later. So you come back later on and your good friend over there at Charles Schwab says, whew, all right, here's $1.5 million. What we did was we took that money, we put it down in cash, we put it in a safe, and now that you're back, here it is back for you. Don't worry about that silly inflation thing that may have happened over the last 10 years. What do you say to your good friend at Charles Schwab? You're fired. That's not what we expect, is it? If we have been given much, does it make sense to hide those things away? Or does it make sense to put those things to work? How are we called to be people of faith? We are called, I believe, to be people who live generously. How do we do that? Because this part of our sermon series, our stewardship series, focuses on the money piece. Yes, let's talk about how to do that generously. And I don't just mean the life of the church. I mean an entire life of generosity. When we go out to eat, when it comes time to pay the bill and the customary tipping that takes place, right, do we get down in specific, particular with the math, so that we can just tip enough to not embarrass ourselves? Or do we recognize that, especially, not so much in this state, but as we travel and other things, there are some states where the minimum wage for people who can earn tips is lower? So do we think about, wow, you know, I have an opportunity to really be generous here. I do be generous on those tips. Here's another example that I heard about earlier this week. You know, I don't travel a lot that I think about this stuff, but I just learned it this week that it's important when you travel, when you stay in a hotel, to leave a tip for the people who are going to come in and clean your room. I didn't know this. I'm learning new things. How can we live a generous life? How can we work with what has been given to us? How can we change our entire spirit to a spirit of generosity? Now, as the sort of chief administrator of this church, of course, I want for part of your generosity to be focused toward the church. I would be grateful for that, not just because my salary comes out of what you give, but because of all the great things that this church participates in. Rick mentioned, when he was speaking with us, he mentioned that, you know, over the course of the last year, our budget looks okay. I find it interesting, you know, when we sit together in finance committee meetings, like I've told you before, I am an optimist. I define myself as a terminal optimist, okay? And Rick is usually one who sort of, he helps balance me out a little bit, okay? He sounded really optimistic, and like an important thing for us to recognize is that we've had some folks who have been active in this congregation for years. We had some folks move away. We've had some folks reach the end of their life. Some folks who are very generous in their giving toward the church. So although this last year has been pretty good, we're also going to have to make up for some giving that is no longer available. We also have some things that we'd like to do. And I'd like to share some of those things with you. I asked some of our committees for a little bit about, like, what are some goals? You know, as you prepare your budget for the coming year, what are some goals? The trustees gave me a couple of goals that they'd like to engage in. Rick mentioned one of them, this building needs to be tented for termites. It's not like we have a massive problem, but we have a little bit going on, and we need to address that. And that's not a cheap thing, especially a building this size, okay? Another thing that trustees would like to do has to do with addressing landscaping, particularly here at this site, but the church owns a number of sites, and so addressing some landscaping across all of the properties that the church owns. And so those are some important things that trustees is looking at. SPRC, the Staff Parish Relations Committee, which is basically the personnel committee. I don't know if you all know this, but SPRC had to cut a majority of staff salaries this last year down by 5%. Now, trustees has been working on how to fix that, but for the coming year, SPRC would love to be sure that those staff salaries are reinstated, and SPRC would love to give a little bump to some of those folks. So that's a goal of SPRC. There are lots of things going on in the life of the church, but these are some things that we might think about. There is a new thing that I haven't shared with you before, but it's sort of a new announcement, and it has to do with our ministries on Wednesday night. I was talking with somebody just within the last week who was talking about some of the new construction that's expected around Sports Arena. Now, I don't know if you go down to the Sports Arena area all that often, but I very often see folks who are living in difficult circumstances, living in the Sports Arena area, and one of the things that is a concern is that as construction happens there, that folks will be displaced from where they are currently finding a safe place to be, and where do we think they might end up? We think they might end up coming a little bit north, which would impact this area, and particularly for the ministries that that take place here. But here's the something that I think is exciting about that, is we have developed a new partnership with a community organization most of you probably know, Father Joe's. Father Joe's is going to start coming here at least once a month, maybe twice a month, to help people exit homelessness or avoid homelessness. There in San Diego County, there's a database called the Coordinated Entry System that is a system where once you get into that database, you have more access to services. When Father Joe's is here on a monthly or biweekly basis, this will be the only place in Pacific Beach where people can get into that database. Right here, Pacific Beach United Methodist Church. That's exciting news. It's good news. And we need to continue to support what happens here so that we can help people avoid or get out of homelessness. These are some of the things that are a part of the ministries here at Pacific Beach United Methodist Church. And there are many ways that we can continue to grow. And we require support to be able to do those things. I've gone really long. Did somebody say again? But I think this is worth spending time in conversation about. I think it's important that we know where we are and where we're headed and see the opportunities. You see, I'm still an optimist. And I think we can continue to do amazing things. I think we can do more amazing things. And what I want for you to get out of this message is not only about the ministries of this church and supporting the ministries of this church, but what I want out of this message for you is a spiritual change to living a generous life. You see, if we start there, I think the rest is going to work itself out. I think that we must live a generous life. Friends, we turn now to a time of prayer. Creator God, we are glad for the opportunity to gather here as a community of faith, to experience the connection of being gathered together in one place, even as we are connected with those who might be separate in physical location and yet still connected. We find that when we gather together in prayer, when we gather together in connection, that our bond continues to grow, that there is strength in community, a strength that sustains us even when we part company during the week knowing that we might return together again. By taking this time of sharing our celebrations and our concerns, we continue to strengthen and grow that connectional bond between us. God, we offer these things to you and any prayers that are left unsaid. As we join together in the prayer taught to us by your Son, our Christ, as we say together, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever.